Earlier this week, the New York Times published an aerial photo from South Sudan. In it, you see thousands of people in orderly lines against a sandy, dry ground. They look like a column of ants. These people were under the hot sun waiting hours for food. It hits home what's going on in South Sudan. Our partners at Frontline have taken visuals of this crisis even further. They've produced a virtual reality documentary about South Sudan's brutal civil war and the widespread famine that has shadowed it. Marcel Hopkins is part of the Frontline team behind the documentary. So tell us essentially what we see when we launch into this documentary. What's going on?
Well, we wanted to take people to South Sudan so that they could hear directly from the people who are experiencing this crisis. So the film opens in a village called Toch, which is in Jonglei State, and it's in one of the rebel-held areas of the country. And the Red Cross is delivering food there, and the village is on an island in a huge swamp, and so it's very difficult for planes to land there. So what they're doing is flying over and dropping food from the air. The first scene opens with that food drop. Viewers actually get to be in the middle of the drop zone as the bags of sorghum and beans and salt and sugar are falling on top of them into this swampy area.
Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary, this one part of it in particular. What does that do for the viewer, do you think? Is there any evidence that this heightens empathy for the people who are living this misery right now?
You know, that's an interesting question, and it's some that a lot of people are studying right now. Some people believe that virtual reality is the empathy machine and that it can heighten empathy for people who are experiencing it. There are several social science researchers who are working on that question right now, and I'm very eager to see actual scientific data about whether that is happening or not.
I would say if there's a story that could really benefit from virtual reality, it is famine, because it's such a difficult thing to capture, to document. Why tell the story of yet another famine, this one in South Sudan, whose evolution is pretty complex?
It is complex, and that is one of the main reasons why we wanted to tell this story. I grew up in the 1980s, and I learned about famine as a child through the famine in Ethiopia. And I was taught that famine is caused by a drought and that it doesn't rain enough in Africa and that this is a very sad situation, but that it's unavoidable because it's Mother Nature. What we learned in reporting on this crisis is that it's not a natural disaster, that is, it is entirely man-made, that this crisis is caused by people who have made decisions that have created the conditions that we're seeing today, which is a civil war that has displaced millions of people, has taken them away from their homes, from their farms, from their cattle. It has taken away their ability to feed themselves.
I've heard tales of single mothers who have to walk for miles with their children to get to these aid stations or the drop zone where the food is landing. How wide is the gap between the need and the aid that's available and getting in?
It's extremely wide. I mean, the international community is doing what it can to serve people there and to prevent people from starvation, but they have a lot of difficulty in reaching the people who are going hungry. There is an active civil war going on. There's active fighting. They are not able to get into some of the places with the highest need. When we were in South Sudan, we met a family on a tiny island in the middle of a swamp. They had just arrived there 2 days earlier. They left their village of Lir, which had been attacked, they said, by government soldiers, and the entire town had been burned down. All of their belongings that were not burned were taken. Their cattle were taken. They were forced out of their homes. They traveled 3 days through the swamp. They had one canoe for a family of 13. We met Peter Luak, who traveled with his 10 children, his wife, and her mother, for 3 days through the swamp to get to this tiny island. When they arrived there, there were other families that had been sheltering there. And those families shared what little rations they had with them. Peter is a fisherman. He started weaving a fishing net so that he could go fishing to feed his family. They forage for wild plants, eat water lilies that are growing in the swamps. But the international community had not been able to reach the town that they came from because of the active fighting, and they had not yet reached this area of the swamp.
Marcel, tell us one story you really wanted to include in the documentary but were unable to because it didn't quite fit in. Was there one?
One of the stories that we did include was about a woman named Nyokos, and we've met her in Bentiu, which is the UN peacekeeping base. When we met her, she had just arrived to the camp. Her village had been attacked. The village was burned. Many of her neighbors and family members were killed. She was abducted by the militia and forced to move with them across the state as they continued on to attack and burn other villages. For 2 months, she was held essentially as a slave. So she had to cook for them. She had to fetch water for them. She said that they raped her repeatedly and they beat her. She escaped one night and spent 10 days walking to this UN camp to find safety. This entire time, she thought that her children, she has 6 children, she thought that her children had probably been killed in the attack on her village. When she arrived to this camp, she found all 6 of her children alive, including a 4-month-old baby. Her oldest daughter was 13 years old, and after the attack on the village, took her 5 younger siblings and walked by themselves for 7 days to get to this UN camp. They also thought that their mother had been killed, and she turns up at the camp 2 months later. And we met them, and we feature Nyakos and her family in the documentary.
Pretty miraculous story. I hope their luck continues. Marcel Hopkins with the frontline team that produced On the Brink of Famine. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
On the Brink of Famine was produced by Frontline and the Brown Institute for Media Innovation. We have that 360-degree experience at PRI.org. You're with the world.